From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
All right, it's Thursday night. Must be time to get your board game geek on The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent, Mark and Leon tonight. Lads, good to see you.
Hello, Trent.
Nice to be back.
Yeah, Trent, you just asked us a question. How was our PAX?
How was PAX?
Well,
I wouldn't know. I wasn't there. I didn't make it.
Yeah, and
I was too busy being an international man of mystery.
Yeah, well, you know, if you'd listened to episode 141, which was last week's episode, you'd know we had a cracker of a time.
That makes this week's episode 142. Thank you.
On the 17th of November 2016, and coming up this week, we've got so much. We're going to talk about what we've been playing, or more, what we played, Leon, at PAX.
Yes.
Because someone was way too busy being an international man of mystery to be there. We're going to talk about...
It's just so not international nor mysterious. I've just been really busy and had no leave.
Oh, so you're saying you're a man? We're also going to talk about how people can use games, the gamification... to teach real life skills with some examples. And we're going to have all the news that is fit to talk about, all that and a whole lot more tonight on The Dice Men Cometh.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is a weekly radio show about board games and card games and the modern iterations thereof. It's not your grandma's Monopoly that we're into here. This being The Dice Men Cometh. My name's Trent. I haven't been on the show for a couple of weeks, and Mark and Leon, you've been away with Garth as well. I came in all excited, my first show in a couple of weeks, and Leon, you're letting the side down.
Why would I be letting the side down, Trent?
How many hours was the shift that you've just done?
Oh, 12 and a bit. You know, regular stuff.
Just pick it up a little bit, will you?
All right? I'm showing enthusiasm. Look at me.
You're the youngest member of the Dice Men. You're supposed to bring the enthusiasm.
I'm bringing plenty.
And the energy.
It's all lies. You can tell, can't you?
It's all drugs.
You'll get a hero dice, and you'll be able to turn over your enthusiasm card.
It took me ages in that damn game.
We're going to get into the latest board gaming news soon, but we start the show every week with what we've been playing lately, except I've got nothing. I've not been playing... a damn thing.
Well, what we're going to do is a classic stand-up comedian trick where they say, what happened to me the other day? It actually happened 2 years ago, but it makes it sound like they had a really interesting week leading up to that show.
What happened to me on the way to the studio tonight?
So what we've been playing recently at PAX 2.5 weeks ago, we played...
Mind you get a lot of gaming in at PAX.
So... Oh, we'll be doing what we've been playing for the next 6 weeks that we played 2 months ago because, you know, screw it. We don't care. It's our show. What do you want from us? Professionalism, so that's what we're going to give you.
12 hours, you reckon, eh?
12 hours and a bit, after like 3 hours sleep.
So what have you been playing? Presumably
what have I been playing?
Not today.
Well, yesterday we just played it. A game called Unfair. It is a 2-5 player theme park tableau building game by Joel Finch and published by Good Games Publishing that plays around 30 minutes per person.
I remember this as a Kickstarter out of Melbourne.
Yes, it was a co-production with the States as well as with Australia, because one of the cool things about it was that Australia got free shipping out of the deal.
Ooh.
And Joel Finch was there himself. He was the man who designed this game, was the one who actually taught us the game at PAX, which was a very nice thing to have there. And also, I believe one of the artists was there as well, but we didn't get a chance to meet her.
Yeah, and the Kickstarter has finished, but I did notice you can make late pledges.
Yes.
So if you go to the Kickstarter page and you search Unfair, there is an opportunity there to make late pledges, even though it's already finished.
Can I tell you that I've got kind of a thing where I don't really particularly like fun fairs and carnivals and stuff?
What happened to you as a child? I mean, we know horrible things, obviously, right, but specifically at a fun fair.
Can I tell you?
Yes.
I went to Luna Park when I was a wee tacker, I went on the Tunnel of Love ride, and there were some filthy, scruffy 70s teenagers in the boat behind us.
Right.
And they were splashing the water and rocking the boat and making noise, and it frightened the shit out of me as a child, and I've never liked it ever since then. So when you say... unfair, I say unfun.
Well, that's true. I went to Luna Park only a few years ago, and their wooden old roller coaster nearly broke my bum. But anyway, we're not talking about my bum, even though we should be. It's glorious. What we're talking about is the game Unfair. So how it works is over the course of 8 rounds, you will play different event cards which help yourself and hinder your opponents, something we're always a big fan of. You will build attractions and you will upgrade them using different park cards, as well as trying to match them to blueprints that you have. The goal is to build the highest scoring park at the end of the game, using 3 main ways to score. Building your park to match blueprints that you've got, building impressive tall attractions with lots of upgrades, crazy bells and whistles, or just buying your way to victory with good old-fashioned cash.
So there's different rides you can build.
Yes.
Tower of Death, roller coasters.
There's lots of different kinds. There's leisure rides, which are obviously a bit more relaxing. There's your thrill rides, which are your roller coasters and your whatnot. There is restaurants you can build in the park, obviously. There's whatever the nature one was, like different...
Yeah, so nature parks. You can even build... what are they, guest services?
Yes.
You can build a cinema. You can build
So everything that actually is, if you go to your Disneyland or your Efteling, which I went to this year in... Where was Efteling? In the Netherlands, I believe.
Yeah.
Which made Disneyland Paris just look like absolute trash.
Wow.
It was really, really good.
Well, look, that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about this is you've got all those different types of attractions.
Yes.
But then what you're doing is you are adding attributes, if you like, to attractions.
Yes.
So you might add air conditioning. Now, of course, you can't add air conditioning to a roller coaster.
It kind of annoys me that they were actually quite clever and you can't add, like, toilets to thrill rides, which is a shame. That would have been good. But I'm sure there's a variant in there. That's the thing I actually haven't got written down. But when we were talking to Joel at the end of it, there's heaps of different variants they've got in the book for different ways of playing this that completely change the game. Mm. And you can do stuff like that that breaks it completely. But the thing about Unfair is that it comes with 6 packs of cards, and you add a pack of cards for each player, and what those cards are different themes for your park. So every time you play the game, everyone will choose a different theme, or you'll just pick, say, if there's 4 people, 4 of them at random, and mix them all together. And what those different themes are, they play differently, so the game will be different each time that you play it.
So spooky carnivals.
Yes, the 6 that come in the base game, there's a pirate theme, which the pirate theme has a lot of taller rides, so you can build them up. There's the jungle theme, which they have more parks and stuff, which you use to have more people to come to your park. And if more people can come to your park, the more money you can make. Robots, which they're big on their attraction building, like big flashy lights and whatnot. Vampires, which have the finest quality of attractions, as well as the staff. Ninjas, for your more... Ninjas are more to kind of screw with your other players, same as gangsters for more brutally screwing with your other players.
All right.
So they're the 6 decks that are coming with the base game of this.
And does everybody play within that theme, or is it different themes versus each other?
Like, we all get you mix them all into a giant old stack, and then you draw, and there's a tableau in front of you, your own tableau, then you have your deck of... your hand of cards, as well as like a storefront in front of you. So you can go the thematic route and have like, I want a park with lots of robot stuff and build off that, or you can mix and match with lots of different stuff.
And the other thing is, so you, as you said, you smash them together, like sort of like Smash Up, where you're putting the different decks into one pile. But then you also get a starting blueprint.
Yes.
And so your starting blueprint, one of the things it will have, and a starting, what was it called, a super attraction?
Yes.
Which is like a special thing that you have to wait for a while before you can play.
The big bad rides that you have to wait for a while to play, but they're the ones that give you the most amount of points and money and stuff.
That will be, so if you had the pirate deck, you would have like a pirate blueprint, I think, and a pirate
and
super attraction.
Your pirate theme super attraction as well. So you've already got a theme to go along with if you want to, but you don't actually have to.
Yeah, but if I'm drawing for the deck, obviously, and I could end up with pirate stuff. Yeah. And it's quite funny, you could actually have a pirate, ninja, robot, vampire roller coaster, for example.
Sure, why not?
Which some of us did by the end.
Yeah, that's right.
just because funsies. But the reason why this is so important is I can't think of any other game that does its... There are other games that might do something similar, but as I said, if you put in the gangsters and the ninjas and stuff like that, there's going to be a lot of player screwing each other over, which for us, that's our bread and butter.
Yeah.
We love that kind of thing. There are certain people that would flat out refuse to play a game that had that kind of stuff in it. So the answer is, don't play with those theme decks. play with your jungle, your robots, that kind of stuff, and then next to no conflict whatsoever. So you can choose between having a game filled with heaps of conflict or none at all.
I like that. Yeah.
I can't think of any other game that lets you do so simply as a matter of put this deck in or don't put that deck in, and that's all it is. So they're the six that come with a base game, but naturally, because board games, there's going to be more. So in the Kickstarter edition, everybody will actually get, I think it's two cards from each of the upcoming six decks that will be available. So they're like teaser cards that you can play with until these decks become available. You've got Western, which you've got to assume would be a lot of cowboys and, you know, robbers and screwing each other around as well.
Well, it's Westworld. Look, anybody who's watching that's going to know how that turns out.
I don't think it'd be quite as sexy, but it's hard to say. Aliens. Aliens are aliens. Dinosaurs. Medieval. Zombies, because of course you don't have much of a choice. And hackers, which is not something you'd think of, but it's in there.
It's not a hacker-themed...
Yeah, it's a hacker-themed deck to do with, I'm guessing...
It's not a hacker-themed park. It's hackers attacking each other's theme.
Well, no, it'd be rides based on... So it'd be a lot of probably VR-type stuff, maybe, and video gaming stuff. And
right.
I did see some of the cards, and there's a lot of cards that give you free Wi-Fi, for example, which you have, and then you get bonus for how much free Wi-Fi you have in your park.
Just so long as it's better than that bloody Justice League ride at Movie World.
Shooting all the Starros.
That's freaking awful.
Yeah, it was not good. But the art design of this game is really very nice. Beautiful art. The money, which are cardboard pieces and stuff like that, but they kind of look like... not poker chips, because they're not round, but something in the similar type of vein. This game itself, all the cards and the board, it's so colourful. I can't think of another game that's as colourful and nice as this as I've seen of late. And also, as we mentioned earlier, you can still get onto this game. It's goodgamespublishing.com, where you can get the late entries. Late December, but most likely early to mid-January, is where this game is going to come in. So I'll just move on to what we thought about it. It was my game of... PAX, I think by a mile. We had an absolute blast. It helped having Joel there, the man himself, talking us through it. But we just had an absolute blast playing it. And I mean, I won by a landslide.
that just has a little bit to do, neither here nor very much there.
But yeah, no, I absolutely loved it, and I can't wait to get my hands on it. It is a game that, because of that variety, I could see myself playing for years to come.
Yeah, look, for me, it had that real. I know there's a computer game. I can't think what it's called, but it had that computer game.
Cool story, bro.
Theme park simulator.
You mean theme park?
Yeah. It has that feel to it.
Yeah.
The graphic interpretation is fantastic. There's multiple ways to win. So you can have a great big park, or you can have a small park with really huge and elaborate rides. You've got so much you can do. And even these, there's the city cards, where the first half of the game, the city cards do... good stuff, and it happens to everyone.
Yep.
And then the second half of the game, the city cards are all bad. Yeah. So it might be, you know, broken sewers, anything with a toilet gets shut down, or tax collectors pay twice as much. It really shakes things up. Apart from the fact that everyone gets an opportunity to shake the game up for each other, the game is doing it to you as well, and that's obviously where the unfair name comes from.
Yeah, you shut down each other's rides and stuff, and that way, at the end of the round, they had no people visiting those rides, hence you get no money for those rides. So
this sounds like a game with a lot of swearing when you turn over those cards that just sort of stuff everybody up.
It's only one, and it's one per round. Okay. But like the one we had in the final round of the game that we played was... it took like most of the money away from half the people that were left, which was brilliant because I wasn't one of those people. But yeah, no, it was really good. I was just thinking then that it's kind of a mix between a Ticket to Ride and Machikoro. Would you say, Mark?
It is quite.
But with a really cool theme that there's not many theme park games out there, and you'd think there'd be a lot more.
I was going to say, it has the appearance of being entry level and it looks brilliant. But because you're sort of ramping up as you go, the difficulty or the way that things interact sort of ramps up as you go as well. So it takes you along for the ride.
Yay. And as we said, you could literally have the kid-friendly version of this game and then the adult, the cutthroaty type version. Like, it's like little kids probably wouldn't be able to do it because there's a lot of different pictures and words and stuff on it. But like your daughter, Trent Pearl, she'd have no hassle with this whatsoever. If she wanted to play the happy, friendly game with you guys on the weekend or the evil game with us.
She'd be playing the screwed out over game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So So we're recording on, what's the date today again? The 17th of...
Thursday the 17th of November.
Of Rockvember. This is still available for pre-order at the moment through Kickstarter?
Yeah, so late pledges, they're calling it, on right. the Kickstarter page you can go to.
Yeah, goodgamespublishing.com. That's where I found it yesterday.
Leon, are you getting this?
I am. I backed it very much so. Because, as I said, it was free shipping to Australia, and they made a big point of putting it in there saying this is a co-production with Australia. We want to give it to Australian gamers. And that alone, I would have happily given them money.
Now, of course, this being what we've been playing lately and PAX being what it is, there is more stuff to talk about. Mark, you've got a game.
I have.
You want to talk about? We'll get back to that in a moment. It's the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Emma Russack and My Own Friend is the name of a song on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are being very, very, very nerdy on a show called The Dice Men Cometh with Trent, Mark and Leon. What have we been playing lately? Games are go-go, let me tell you.
We have been playing so many games. As we said, we're going to be talking about them for weeks, but another game we played at PAX was Tiny Epic Western. And I've got to say, two of those three words are correct. One of them is way out of the park.
There's been a bunch of these tiny epic games.
Yeah, well, have you...
Not one.
You haven't played any of them?
Never played them.
Leon?
No. I've got Kingdoms and really like it. I've now got Western, which I'll tell you about in a minute. I had Galaxy and then sold it because I was a bit on it, but that's the one that everyone absolutely loves.
Yeah, well,
it's worth owning, but I just didn't feel it when I first played it. But
that's
probably
the only one that I've played because
The whole premise is to get an epic feeling game in your pocket.
It's not a half an hour game. It is literally a two-hour game, which we normally play, except it's in a box.
Well, I was going to say,
big for all the people that can't see me doing my hands.
Yeah. See, my experience with Tiny Epic Galaxies was, it was tiny.
Yeah.
It had galaxies, but I wouldn't say it was epic in any way. And looking at the pictures of, so there's Tiny Epic Kingdom, Tiny Epic Defenders, Tiny Epic Galaxies, Tiny Epic Quest, and Tiny Epic Western. And the pictures I've seen of the other ones, they are quite small. And that's the thing. The word that is not true in this is tiny. Because this thing, you basically build a board out of cards. It very thematically forms a wagon wheel.
It does take up the biggest space on the table of any of these games, far. Except for the new one that's on Kickstarter at the moment.
Oh,
I think
that'd
be Tiny Epic Quest, I think, is the new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, so what is happening in this is, you know, the West is growing day by day, and you, of course, are looking to stake your claim. Now, to win, you have to gamble. I've got two things to say to you, Trent. Poker.
And Mon?
No.
Oh.
Bullet dice.
What?
Bullet dice.
From Bang the card game.
No. So these are D6s, but they are hexagonal cylinders or hexagonal bullets that you roll for dice with the numbers 1 to 6 on them. That's, and they're in your player colours.
Just about the most stupid thing I've heard so far this year.
I love the bullet dice.
You'd love it. Don't pretend like you wouldn't.
So there's three types of resources you've got to manage in this. So you've got law, you've got force, and you've got money. So if you're clever enough, you're able to claim buildings. The buildings give you ways to win at poker and special powers. And at the end of the day, the person who has the most buildings, the best combination of wit and bluff, is going to become the most powerful tycoon in the Wild West. So a lot of this is revolving around poker and poker hands. Now, you've got cards in the game. They just go from 1 to 5. And they've got their own suits. So no boring diamonds and hearts. They've got buffalo horns. They've got cowboy hats. They've got horseshoes.
My, how innovative.
Yeah. But I must admit, it looks great. The whole game looks really Western. It's got great art. It's got a great feel. It's got a vibe about it that, as I said, is epic and
like
is Western.
Dying of dysentery.
So what you're doing is you're basically playing poker against each other and against the game to compete for these locations. And the locations,
the abilities change. Some of the locations give you loot, the different types of resources, which you use to fight duels. So if I go to a location and say, hey, I'm going to stake my claim on this one, that I'm going to beat the bank in poker, then you can come there and you can say, well, I think I'm going to beat you, and we have a shootout. I can use, if I'm a defender, I can use law resources to say, no, I'm going to win, and then you need to use force to force me to up my ante, and then I can turn my... Then we roll a die, but then I can flip my card over and show it to your face up and add that to my dice score.
I'll force it right up your ante, buddy.
So
no matter how much of your face you give me.
Okay. So there's a lot of poker, but it's very simple poker because you've only got the cards 1 to 5.
Yep. Sorry, we've lost Trent.
Yeah, we have.
But yeah, so at its core, it's a worker placement game. But the thing is, they've very cleverly put just a few amount of spaces on the board that force conflict.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the conflict, it's not the end of the world. If you lose a duel, you don't, you know, you still can get some stuff out of it at the end of it. It's not an absolutely horrible thing, but yeah, it forces that conflict and that dueling thing. So it's not going to be one person going, oh, I'm going to fight everybody. Everyone has no choice in the matter. People will go where you want to go, and you're going to have to shoot them in the face.
And you have different player abilities. So you might have the lawman that makes it easier to be a defender in a duel. Or you might have the... Richard taught us this game, our great friend Richard Canning from Melbourne. He had the... I can't think what it was. It was like the snake oil salesman.
The apothecary.
Apothecary, that's right. The one. And so when other people got shot in the duel, he got extra cash.
Yeah. And I had the gambler, so I could get some extra poker cards to look at each turn.
Yeah, so look, you know, it has the fun and randomness and bluffing of poker with the sort of Euro worker placement feel. And as I said, it feels like a fully formed big box game. And I really compare this to other games that I've played where they perhaps are a big box on a shelf, but the gameplay itself does not feel epic in any way. So hats off to Gameland Games for creating a fully formed and a game that feels like a big full-on board game that has the, you know, the shelf space of do people say packet of cigarettes in the 21st century?
No, well,
a box of cigarettes. It's not quite that small. But yeah, it's one of the things that they've been criticized for, which I think is weird because they've stated, you know, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Is that every single one of their game could have easily been a massive type big game, but they've specifically done this for a reason to make it these big games that everyone loves in a small box.
Yeah.
Some people have a problem with that, which I think is weird because we don't want everything to be the same.
Well, there's a number of good environmental and logistical reasons why you'd want your box to be as small as possible,
exactly.
But it goes against the conventional wisdom of retailing, which is that you want your box to be as big as possible to take up the shelf space and to basically leap out and grab the customers. I'm intrigued, though, all of these tiny epic games, Galaxies, Quests, whatever.
Kingdom Defenders.
Are they the same game re-implemented?
No. They've definitely got bits and pieces. Like, they've all got resources. They generally have 2 or 3 resources, and they'll have like one track with different things you put on them, and you use those resources to do lots of different stuff. And also, there's a lot of... They're all got worker placement in them as well, but they're all different enough to own. Like, I've got Kingdom, I've got Western. I'd happily own both of them. They're completely different.
Is it like the legendary card game?
That's more varied than that.
Yeah, they have a certain underlying one or two pieces, and that's it.
Like I said, worker placement and resource management, that's about it. And then, the different themes and all that kind of stuff, they're all worth owning, except for I haven't even played Defenders, but I've heard nothing but bad things about it.
Well, look, to me, you know, this one had... It had poker, it had gunfights, it had wanted posters, it had sheriffs. Yep. It had a real Western feel. And in fact, I posted up an Instagram photo the other night, and I did the thing where I made Richard and Garth, who were sort of, you know, blowing the smoke off a gun and pointing at each other and stuff. You know, I made them look like an old-timey-wimey photo. Yep. And to me, the game really brings out that theme of poker and gunfighting. I really enjoyed it, and I think there's nothing tiny and everything epic about this game.
Hmm. Yeah, there's two important things that I need to say about this game. The first one is, I backed this on Kickstarter, so I got it just before PAX. I read the rule book from cover to cover. I then watched a video on how to play it. Still had no idea how to play it. It just, I could not wrap my head around it. But then we, and then Richard explained it to us, and I was kind of again like, yeah, kind of get it, but then around into it, made perfect sense to me.
So had you just done a 12-hour shift before?
No.
This is me with clear head. Wow.
It's just, we've all had those games, haven't we? Where you've read the book and gone, I still don't get it. Or I've watched the video, I still don't get it. But then around into the game, you go, this is perfectly simple. Why have I... And I don't think there's necessarily a bad design rule book or the videos. It's just, you don't get it until you start playing it. And the second most important point was, who won it again?
Oh, here we go.
Who was the person that won that game?
I thought I did.
No, I won it, didn't I?
Maybe we were drawn, and because I had the most something, I won the tiebreaker. You did well anyway, Leon.
Clearly.
Good on you.
Clearly, Western history is open to interpretation, is what I'm getting here.
And look, one final point on this. Like, you talked about retail and this bucking the trend of retail. You want the big box to get on the shelf. These things are marketed on Kickstarter. And what's important with Kickstarter is how your Kickstarter looks, how quickly you get the product out, how cheap you can ship it.
Yeah, that's the big one.
And so, they're not thinking about producing thousands and thousands of units that sit on shelves. They're moving on to the next iteration of their tiny epic game on Kickstarter. And so they're cheap to ship, they're cheap to build, but they provide a full gaming experience.
And, you know, it's not,
a paradigm shift.
It's not going to matter when we start ordering everything that we want through Amazon, which is something I'm going to be talking about in just a moment in board game news. Coming up next, it's the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With a track from the Last Baroness album earlier this year. This is called Shock Me.
That was Baroness with Shock Me. You're here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's that time, gentlemen.
Sorry.
Board gaming news. Blood Bowl 2016.
Woo!
Oh my god.
That game has been around for such a long time.
I've never played it. Have you played it?
No, I haven't played it. I've seen it. I think it's like early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
Remember the very first episode when we had that interview with the Australian comedian
Tommy Dean. He's a massive,
and he's a Blood Bowl man.
That's right. That's
who
right.
was at PAX, but didn't
he
get a chance
was
to say
PAX.
Hello.
But this whole idea of fantasy gridiron in the Warhammer universe is so deeply, deeply, deeply
nerdy,
deeply dumb that it just makes me want to stab myself in the penis. It really does.
I've never even played the...
It makes me want to do that to you too, Trent.
The Blood Bowl Team Manager, which was like the card game
deck builder version.
Yeah.
Oh, come off it!
Yeah, that was about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe.
Anyway, I heard good things about it.
It never took off.
People are excited, and you can apparently pre-order it in time for Christmas. Dungeons & Dragons has been inducted into Strong's National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. And I think people's first reaction to this news is, there's a National Toy Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Followed by, D&D absolutely deserves this, surely. Yeah. But then you look to see what else got nominated this year that D&D beat. So D&D was up against Care Bears, Clue,
wow,
Transformers, Uno, Pinball.
What?
Colouring Books.
Colouring Books!
Dungeons & Dragons versus Colouring Books and Bubble Wrap.
Is it toys?
Bubble Wrap was robbed.
So I don't know that this is a particularly well-organised thing, but anyway, there you go. We've been talking about Agricola a bit lately and Caverna, and it looks like there is life in this game yet after it basically transformed the hobby back in the 90s, I want to say.
No, 2008.
Is that when it came out?
Yes.
My goodness, I feel not that old all of a sudden. Anyway, Mayfair Games released a new print of the game earlier this year, and they'll shortly follow it up with a line of 6 Agricola upgrade kits with miniatures and unique cards. And you can look for these in 2017. Earlier expansions from Agricola have sort of been folded into this new base set. It's a sort of best of the expansions, apparently.
It's such an odd thing, because when Caverna came out, a lot of people, at least probably 50% of people, were saying like, well, this is the Agricola killer. Never going to play Agricola again because I've got Caverna. And then they turned around and went, well, you know what we're going to do as a publisher? We're going to give you a lot more Agricola and say nothing about Caverna ever again.
Well, it's probably the fact that two or three years later, they'll do the same thing, Caverna.
Yeah.
With Caverna. Although, I was having a chat to Karen at PAX. Did we tell you we went to PAX, Trent? I was having a chat with Karen at PAX, who's a huge Uwe Rosenberg fan. And she said to me, really, when you're an Uwe Rosenberg fan, you're really, you're an Agricola person or you're a Caverna person, because they sort of go two different ways, even though they've got so many similarities. And I found that fascinating, because I know I enjoy Agricola more than I have enjoyed Caverna, whereas yourself and Garth, I know, Trent, you really enjoyed Caverna, and Agricola was probably a bit, not so sure.
Can you see me doing a really good job of pretending to be interested?
Yes.
And at PAX, we sat next to a copy of that, A Feast for Odin, which is his new game, in the weirdest shape box in the history of ever.
Yeah, it's just massive.
It's like a shoebox. That's exactly what it is. It's the size of a shoebox, like dimension-wise. And
big
how that's going to fit on anybody's shelf, I don't know.
It'll certainly take up some space on a retail shelf.
It's
though.
Like a size 14 pair of boots shoebox.
Yeah.
It's massive. And that one is apparently more the Agricola style and less the Caverna style. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, the more they roll and gather more moss. Those stones?
Move on, Trent. Move on, for God's sake.
Should I buy the new Alien Legendary expansion?
Yes.
Yep.
Do you think so?
Well, yep. We want to play it.
We've not once beaten the original game.
Exactly. Yeah. There might be some cards in there that help us.
This is the card game that lets you play through any of the three Alien movies. The expansion's got another 400 cards in it.
Yeah.
New Alien hives, new characters, new objectives, flying aliens. And you can play as the Alien Queen, apparently.
Ooh. Oh, well, apparently, surely before you buy that, Trent, you need to buy the Big Trouble in Little China Legendary,
you know,
Encounters game.
I just want to buy it just for the art, but I don't think it looks any good.
No, it does not.
Steve Jackson Games is running a Kickstarter to create plastic miniatures for its 40-year-old Ogre tabletop tank battles game, thereby proving that there is no property this company will not flog to death,
they
given a chance.
They have also just started selling Munchkin in Target in the USA, so it's going to be sitting next to your Clue, your Monopoly, and all those for a long time.
And you know what else I saw recently in terms, like, you know, Munchkin's crossing over with every other property you can find? Munchkin, Judge Dredd.
Ooh, I was going to say, I've seen Marvel Munchkin.
A little piece of me just died when it saw that.
Some of them have got... I mean, I think I played the base game once, and then that was like 5 years ago, and I've never seen it. Some of them have to be all right, surely.
Which the thing is, it's the
same... Don't look
same,
at me like that. There's got to be...
It's the
what?
Same game, though. It's the same game.
Look, Munchkin, I don't know how many times we've said this on the show, Munchkin is a fine little card game. It takes the piss out of Dungeons & Dragons. It does that very, very successfully.
Yeah.
But it's become this whole cash cow thing.
And well, there's no wonder it's in Target, because it deserves to sit right next to Horseopoly, Cowopoly, Catopoly, Dogopoly, AFLopoly, Vampireopoly, because that's what it is. It's just a reskin.
It's being bought by people who don't know what it's actually referencing.
Yeah. Well, Catopoly? I think my wife just Googled something.
Moving on. The Outlander TV series is getting its own tabletop game.
Ooh.
The oh-so-imaginatively entitled... Outlander Destiny Dice from Toy Vault. Roll to bring Jamie and Claire together to fulfill their destiny. Have you guys seen Outlander?
Yeah, a few episodes.
Right, so this is Ronald Moore of Battlestar Galactica fame, okay? This is the show that he finished BSG and went on to make Outlander.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, it's a show... Look, it's... I mean, it's a proper show. It's not my thing, okay? I mean, it's full of drama and rumpy pumpy and, you know, and look,
it's like Mills and Boone meets
but it's done,
you know, Doctor Who in Scotland.
But it's done really, really well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You know, like, it's a serious show. And it's got this male villain in it who goes so far as to kind of rape the male protagonist at one, like, it's not entirely unenjoyable. You know? So look, it's something that's a bit more deserving than a custom dice rolling game.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
I think you can do better than
this. Absolutely, you could.
Right?
Yeah,
and this is just a classic case of an industry really not thinking about its female audience. I think because it's a female skewed show.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And which sometimes I'm forced to watch because the wife loves it. And finally, in board gaming news, Amazon has just opened 23 new fulfillment centers across the US in the past 5 months. Now, these are the fulfillment centers. These are the giant warehouses that employees race around in some kind of Hunger Games style deathmatch.
And now drones are delivering parcels? Is that's what's coming?
No. But the amount of... I wish.
Yeah.
I mean, they deliver sausages now. We've all seen that.
Very expensive ones by the sounds of it.
Amazon is now within 20 miles of 44% of the American population.
Oh.
But they are yet to open any kind of store or any kind of physical presence here in Australia. But Amazon will, in 2017, be opening a store of some description in Melbourne.
Wow.
They've promised, but they're quite a secretive company, so it's not quite clear what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because they seem to be moving into groceries, believe it or not.
Oh, no surprise.
Well, if anyone can break the duopoly, and let's call it what it is, of Coles and Woolworths, then it's got to be a giant like Amazon.
Yeah, and because they've put a lot of resources into their online stores as well. And, you know, it's all about convenience, isn't it? You don't have to go shopping. You can shop in the middle of the night and then organise the, you know, you pay a few bucks extra to have your groceries show up at exactly the time you need them on your doorstep.
And it's all about logistics, which is what they do best.
And Amazon did start as just a bookshop, didn't it? From what I recall.
Yes.
Because I used to buy my comic books from there before shipping went mental, but I do remember that it used to be a bookshop. And just where it's come from since then, it's insane.
Look, a reminder to everybody that if this does actually eventuate that Amazon is flogging games from here in Australia, don't forget to support your friendly local game store after all of this.
Oh, yeah, cool.
If you want to continue having one, right? Otherwise, it's going to be like... I mean, if you don't think... ask yourself this. When was the last time you bought any hardware-related item from anywhere but Bunnings?
Mm.
Right? You're going to have the same thing happen.
Went to K&D the other day because Bunnings didn't have the thing we wanted.
Did K&D have it?
Yes. They did, actually. They did.
But it's Bunnings or Mitre 10, isn't it? And Bunnings is taking over Mitre 10.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
And not only your friendly local game stores, but also your friendly Australian online game stores.
Exactly. So that's my board gaming news.
But you missed out the most important one, Trench, very quickly. Catopoly is a real thing. I just Googled it.
I knew that.
Just to let all the listeners know the important bit of news, Catopoly is a real thing. Get on it now.
Now, just before we go to the next break, I need to remind you all that Radio Romance is on right now. It's your chance to show Edge some love. So check it out at edgeradio.org.au/Radio Romance. There are a lot of prizes to be won. We want you to fall in love with radio again. And tonight, for you listening live, tonight there's a karaoke night at the Grand Pooh Bar, 8 p.m. till late, and it's free entry with a photo booth. And tomorrow night there is a plethora of bands at the Brisbane Hotel. Again, 8 until late, $10 on the door. But if you're an Edge subscriber, only $5. And on November the 20th, which I believe is Sunday, they're going to have a live broadcast from the Farmgate Market. And of course, that's free too. All of those things and more in Radio Romance. Check it out, edgeradio.org.au/Radio Romance.
This is because we want you to support Edge Radio, because without them, there's no us. There's
absolutely.
No, there's no Dicemen. So thanks to Edge for looking after us again, and we can only hope to reciprocate. Okay, more of the Dicemen coming up next. Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. A Mo Grizzly from the wilds of Taswegia on Edge Radio 99.3 FM as the Dice Men cometh prepare to wrap up. Quick plug for an Aussie Kickstarter happening at the moment called Vax Cards, V-A-X Cards. It's a game about vaccinations in an era when opinions and outright boneheadedness can just outweigh science. It's a game that teaches kids and adults the importance of vaccination and all the different diseases that can kill you!
Like vasectomies?
The Japanese encephalitis card is particularly nasty looking. Can I tell you?
Yeah.
It's already funded on Kickstarter.
Cool.
But look, it's not just a sort of do-gooding public education thing. They've actually gone to the trouble of making a real game out of this.
Yeah.
It sort of looks like a grosser Dumb Ways to Die. Is the sort of level.
Yeah.
There's starter decks, booster decks and tropical decks. They're also planning on translating it into multiple languages for use overseas, which I think is particularly important in places like Africa.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's Vax Cards on Kickstarter and vaxcards.com. And it just got me thinking about other areas where games could play a role in educating people. I mean, I think this is just a fantastic example.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to mention before you said translated to different languages, just stuff to do with vaccination, even if it's in plain English, people still can't.
Well, there you anyway. Go.
Yeah, well, I immediately thought of, and look, I guess you got to be careful with the art, but for similar reasons, getting these stories and these ideas out to remote areas, sex education would be a brilliant one. Like, for high school kids.
Yeah.
You know, a game about sex education, like how not to catch the pox.
Yeah.
Or how not to get pregnant, you know, and because there's a risk and reward strategy there, absolutely.
Because we're pretty good with sex education in this country, quite luckily, but a lot of countries aren't at all. You can literally look at a graph and look at teenage pregnancy and when sex education is taught in schools, and it is perfect balance either which ways. The countries where it's taught really, really early in schools, like no teenage pregnancies. The countries where it's pretty much not taught at all, just massive, massive.
How many times, you know, have you rolled the dice in terms of, you know, sexually transmitted diseases?
To be semi-serious for just a moment, Tasmania, where we broadcast this show from, has the highest rates of teenage pregnancy and the highest rates of high school dropouts in Australia.
Yeah.
All right? And look, I don't think if you put out sex education, the game, that anyone's going to play it. So I think the better approach is to go ironic and make a game called Bogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the extent of my idea so far.
Okay.
That's right? Good. It's good enough. It'd sell.
But Paul Fenwick did it with, you know, the Hunt for Australia's Biggest Bogan, whatever it was called. If you implement that into a game, Bogan the game. Come on, there's a wealth of material you could work with.
Well,
there.
Look, back on a serious topic, I thought about, you know, financial skills, because, I mean, that's where Monopoly started, really, trying to teach the great unwashed about what it is that the 1% do and why they're so rich. You know, it was all about the property. And we have these, what's his name? Robert Kiyosaki, the rich dad, poor dad. You see them on eBay all the time. He has these games where you learn about financial management. You learn about the share market. You learn about shorting and all those funny derivatives and things that real rich people do that none of us sort of know much about. But that has never been popular. Part of it may have been that he was charging probably about $500 a copy. And, you know, you see them on eBay all the time, and they're still offering a few hundred, but something like that in an affordable way that taught it in a common sense and interesting way, I think would be really great.
I've heard that Vital Lacerda's CO2, the carbon trading game, is getting a revamp.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's going to be polished up a la Vinhos, his winemaking game.
They're going to Ian O'Toole it.
Ian O'Toole, the graphic designer, new design, and it's going to be republished at some point. And I've heard that straight from the source himself, Vital Lacerda, who, can I say, is perhaps the most attractive board game designer that I've ever spoken to.
Why?
He looks like a mix of Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Javier Bardem.
Oh, wow.
He's a very attractive man. Anyway, I was lucky enough to actually chat to him just this morning, recorded that chat, and we're going to play that on the show next week.
Well, I think it'd be a great idea if we had that interview, if we talked about our play of Lisboa, because we were lucky enough to play it at PAX.
That's his game that's on
Kickstarter.
With
the graphic designer and artist Ian O'Toole, and then we can catch people up with the Kickstarter, because it just launched. Was it yesterday, Wednesday?
I believe it was yesterday.
Or very late Tuesday night.
As soon as I saw it, it had, I think it was 150K in like, it was 18 hours or something.
It was funded in an hour.
Yeah, as well it should be.
Now we're just going to see how many stretch goals we can get. I've backed the autographed numbered version.
Ooh. It's a very big historical game and quite a personal one for him as well, as I found out. And you'll find out too next week. when we play you that interview with Vital Lacerda, one of our leading game designers in this hobby. This is the Dice Men Cometh signing off for another Thursday night. Don't forget to support Radio Romance at Edge Radio 99.3 FM and help keep us on the air. Catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.